Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back to today's Daf, Bava Kama Daf Peches. We are holding four lines off the top of the Yom. The Chovel Bevet Kanani Shal Achirim Chaye V'chulu, Rabbi Yehuda says, however, when it comes to Boishes, compensation for embarrassment, for shame, that doesn't pertain to an Eved Kanani, who is a slave, who is not a Yiddish slave. So if one attacks an Eved Kanani, he will not pay boishes. Why? My time with Rabbi Yehuda, why is that so? Amakro, the pasuk pertaining to the boishes payout, uses the following words, ki notzu anoshim yachtov, ish va'achav. You have an ish va'achav, a Yid and his fellow Yid are having this confrontation. And then we have a discussion regarding boishes payout. So we learn that boishes only applies to a fellow Yid, one of your brethren, b'mishi yesh lo achva, only to a person with whom you have achva. Rashi says, im yisrael she'im bo b'kol. So basically, achva pertains to familial relations, to communal relations, a person who can intermarry with you. Yotze eved she'im lo achva, as opposed to an eved who cannot marry into the community. So according to Abiyuda, achva pertains to marriage and familial matters. So an eved, he's out of the picture. There's no boishes payout. V'rabbanan, however, Rabbanan disagree. You pay boishes even for attacking an Eved. Although the pasuk mentions Achiv. Achiv does not necessarily pertain to marriage-related, you know, access. Rather, Achiv hu b'mitzvos, as long as you have something very strongly in common with the Eved. Just as you obligated, just as you do mitzvahs, so achva here means somebody who, like you, is in the same boat. An eved also fulfills mitzvahs, Rashi says, which mitzvahs? Kol mitzvahs sha'isha chayev esbo, eved chayev bo. We learn from Exer Shava, just like an isha is chayev in certain mitzvahs, right? The mitzvahs loisa asay, and mitzvahs asay, which are not time-related. Likewise, an eved is chayev in all those mitzvahs, so achva refers to that status. Achiv hu b'mitzvos, and therefore there is boishes even for attacking an eved. Says the Gemara, El Miata. Let's go back to Rabbi Yehuda. An eved is not regarded as your brother. El Miata Rabbi Yehuda. Koin to Rabbi Yehuda, Zayim le'eved. So you have, you know, Edim who plotted against an eved Kanani. They tried to impose misas, tried to trigger the misa penalty from the Bezdin. They presented a false story as though the Eved is Chayiv Misa, and it turns out that they're Zayimin, they're falsifiers, they're, you know, Edim Zayimin, in which case, typically, we turn things around and we apply that process to them. Wanted to kill them, they get killed, right? But according to Yehuda, that whole process does not apply to an Eved Kanani, who is victimized by these Edim Zayimin. We don't kill them. How come? We apply to the Edim Zayimin just as they had plotted to inflict upon their brother as opposed to an Eved. Amar Rav, Amar Rav Sheshes. No, here it's different. Amar Kro, we have a special pasuk to include even the Edim Zayimin in this case. Eradicate evil from within you. Mikol Makayim, including this type of situation as well. Elamiyat. Now, on the flip side, let's have a question according to the Rabban. The Rabban, who say that even an Eved can be labeled as one of your brethren. The Rabban on the Eved, Kashal Malchus. So, technically, we can appoint even an Eved as our king. The Pasuk says you need to have one of your brethren, Mikarev Achecha, which according to Rabbanon, an Eved, you know, fully qualifies for that title. So why can't we appoint an Eved? Well, it Amri, so the question was like this. The response was, according to you, Tikshalach Ger Livrakol. Ask the same question regarding convert. According to all Shittas, He was born Jewish. Rashi says, we're speaking about a ger, meaning he's coming from non-Jewish parents, but he was born after his mother converted. That's the case. Even that type of case, you cannot appoint him as king, as per the Gemara in Nivamis. So the question is, why? Why is he not called? If an Eved is called a Chicha, right? So why can't we appoint an Eved, a Ger? Right? So all, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, right? Because he's called a Chicha. Says the Gemara Elamakra. Apparently, because there's a special pasuk that limits our options when it comes to appointing a king. He has to have, you know, full-fledged, you know, Jewish stock, Jewish lineage. Amakra mekerev achecha. The king that you will appoint has to be from within your brethren, from the midst of your brethren, the best. From the best in your community, meaning the one with full Jewish stock. So going to all shittas, a ger, notwithstanding his high status and his, personally, perhaps, you know, he's just as good, but there's a special stipulation. When it comes to appointing a king, we have special qualification. It has to be somebody who's, you know, naturally born Yid, and that answers this question. Frakti Gemara asks the Gemara, Lamiyata, according to Rabbanon, who consider even an Eved as one of yours, as a Chicha, Lamiyata l'Rabbanon, hey, Eved kosher le'edus. What about allowing an Eved Kanani, we're speaking, to get up and offer testimony in a Bezdin? We should accept his testimony. Why? We have a lashon achiv by an eid, and an eved should qualify. And we all know that it's not so. We don't accept eidus from an eved. Amar Ula says Ula eidus lematzas amos. No, you can't suggest. You cannot suggest that an eved is kosher for eidus for a different reason, unrelated to achecha or to achiv. How? Ask your edus. When it comes to edus, we can derive by way of a kavachomer from a woman who cannot offer testimony in the bezdin. Likewise, certainly an eved. How? Uma isha she ruuya lava bekol psula leedus. Even a regular Jewish woman who's ruuya lava bekol, she can fully access the Jewish community in terms of marriage, still, she's not qualified to offer edus. And Rashi brings the Gemara in Shvois. Why? Because the pasuk specifically says, "V'amdu shtei ha'anoshim," the two men will get up and offer testimony. So we learn that an isha will not say edus. Of course, certainly, eved shein eroy lava b'kol, eved who typically cannot marry into the community, his marriage options are very limited. Ein din shepasul edus. Of course, he's not qualified to offer testimony. Asks the Gemara, how can we compare Eved to Isha? Perhaps an Isha is more deficient than the Eved. Mali Isha shekein eina ru'uya lemila. An Isha, she does not relate to the mitzvah of Mila. Toimar be'Eved sheroi lemila, but an Eved has one up, has an advantage over the Isha, because he will experience Mila. Well, says the Gemara, katan yichiach. We can disprove that notion from the katan. A boy below bar mitzvah, sheyeshna b'mila, who pasul edus. He cannot offer testimony despite the fact that he has mila. Apparently, that's not a factor at play. Well, malakotan she'ena b'mitzvahs. You can't disprove anything from the katan because a katan has his own deficiency vis-a-vis the eved. An eved, even eved kanani, we said before, has mitzvahs, right? At least a limited amount of mitzvahs, like a woman, as opposed to a katan, totally putter from mitzvahs. Toimar be'eved, right? Shubim it's mitzvahs. So maybe he can be an aid as well. Well, isha techiach will disprove that notion from the isha. Because despite the fact that she eshna b'mitzvahs, she is obligated in some mitzvahs, psu'upsul aidus, and cannot be an aid. So likewise the eved. B'chazar adin. And this is sort of going to toss us back and forth. Because, you see, there are factors by the isha that you can sort of attribute the psul of the aidus, which don't apply to the eved. And, you know, there are factors by the katan as well, which we know, which can be sort of the reason to blame for his psul edus, which don't apply to the. So basically, we're sort of going back and forth, trying to find a sort of to pin the blame, find the reason, the cause for these individuals being disqualified from saying edus, and they're not similar. The Isha has one reason which doesn't apply to the Katan. The Katan has a different reason which doesn't apply to the Isha. So you can't sort of attribute the halach of being disqualified for offering testimony to that reason. The reason over here doesn't apply to the other one, and likewise, vice versa. So apparently that's not the reason. What then? We have to find a common denominator, right? So what is common to both these sources, to Isha and to Katan? Hatzada Shava Shaben, what's the one thing in common? Shekein Einan B'chol HaMitzvahs. Both the Isha and the Katan, they're not obligated in all mitzvahs. A Katan, no mitzvahs, and a Isha, only partial, right? So it's not a full comprehensive Chiyiv Mitzvahs. Upsul L'Hod, and likewise, their Pasoladus. Oh, so we'll use that as a formula. Afani Avi Eso Eved, likewise. We can derive and compare and apply this to the Eved, She'enoi B'chol HaMitzvahs, who likewise does not have full mitzvah obligations. At most, he's like an Isha. And likewise, a Pasol Hoid, he cannot be an aid. Pretty beautiful. Asks the Gemara, hold it. Mala Tzad HaShav HaShabahen, but for working with this concept of common denominators, we found something. We found a component relevant to Isha and to Katan and not to the Eved. So it's incomparable. Shekein Einay Ish. Both the woman is not a man, and likewise the Katan. So, as Rashi explains, the Pasuk by Eidus specifically uses the word Anoshim, right? V'amdu Shneha Anoshim. So that explains why not an Isha and not a Katan. As opposed to an Eved, Taimar be'Eved, Shuish, he's a man, he's an adult. So maybe he can be an Eid. Says the Gemara, you're right. This is not really a fair source. Elatesi Migadlon. We can derive the psul edus by the eved from a robber who's psul edus as well. Well, says the Gemara. First of all, says Rashi, how do we know that a gazlan is psul edus? We have pasuk in Shmoyis Chav Gimel. Altashes yodcha. Right? In Russia over there, it says you cannot cooperate. Don't accept testimony from a Russia, from a robber, from a gazlan. Okay, so just as he's psul. So perhaps the Eved as well. Whoa, what's the connection? Malak Gazlan says, how could you compare to a robber? Shekein Masav Garmaloi. He did something terribly wrong. He stole, he robbed. Of course he is puzzle for Eidus. Tell me about Eved Shekein Masav Garmaloi as opposed to an Eved. He did nothing wrong. Elotesim Megazlan Machad Mehanach. Oh, we'll make a new equation. We'll put together Gazlan and one of those. Which one? You know, one of those we mentioned before, whether it's the Isha or the Katan, and we'll say, look, Rashi presents the formula. The Tzad HaShava, the common denominator in this case, will be like this. What's common to the Gazlan, who's not really meticulous about, you know, keeping mitzvahs, right, obviously, and let's say an Isha, right? She's also not going to do all the mitzvahs. For a different reason, right? Totally different reason. But ultimately, they do have something in common. They're not Zohar B'chol HaMitzvah, says Rashi. They don't fulfill all the mitzvahs for different reasons. So, just as their Pasul Eidus, likewise an Eved. Says the Gemara, fine, that's one source. Here comes another source that an Eved will not be kosher to give Eidus. Mar Brid Ravina Omar. We have another pasuk, Amakro lo yumsu aveis albonim. So this pasuk says like this. Lo yumsu aveis albonim, which in a simple sense means like this. Aveis, fathers, right? A father cannot be punished on account of the testimony offered by his own son. So basically, a son cannot testify against his father in Bezdin. Ubonim, lo yumsu al aveis. Likewise, a father cannot testify against his son in Bezdin. Ish b'cheta yumasu. That's it, right? We don't accept father against the son against the father. That's a simple meaning of the pasuk. Here comes a drasha. Lo yumsu al aveis al banim means like this. It teaches us that an Eved who doesn't have the concept of lineage, of yichus, right? The Eved is like a bal chai, it's like your animal. There's no yichus there. His child doesn't really identify with him, etc. So lo yumsu al pi avois shehein lehem chayis banim. There's no misa applied in Bezdin. Basically, we don't accept any testimony in Bezdin from a person, from a father, who although physically has children, but halachically those children don't relate to him. Who's that type of person? An Eved. She'ein lahem chayis banim. Their sons, their children don't relate to them, don't identify with them. So basically, an Eved cannot offer testimony in Bezdin. That's the drasha behind this pasuk. Because if you insist that this pasuk is meant to be learned only literally, which is the simple meaning, fathers and sons cannot testify against each other. Nothing to do with an Eved, just a regular, you know, Lyumsu aveis al banim. You can never kill a father due to the edus of his own son, be'edus banim, right? If that's all it means, the simple meaning of the pasuk, then the pasuk would phrase itself a bit differently than it did. Lichtav Rachman, the pasuk should say like this. Lo yumsu aveis al b'neim. Aveis can never be put to death al b'neim due to their children's testimony. Okay, simple halacha. My b'neim. It says lo yumsu aveis al b'neim. Some sort of general term on account of b'neim. Not their children, b'neim. Shema mino. Apparently, there's a deeper meaning here as well to disqualify the Eved from offering testimony. You can never put a person to death. Basically, you can't accept testimony and edus from any person whose sons, whose offspring don't relate to him, i.e. an Eved. Okay, so this first part of the pasuk has a double meaning. Simple meaning. Lo aveis al banim. Banim can never testify against their fathers. Deeper meaning, lo yumsu aveis al banim. A person like an Eved, whose sons, whose children, whose offspring don't identify with him, halachically, these fellows can never be kosher as Edim. Elamiyat, if that's the case, if that's how you learn part one of the pasuk, let's proceed to part B. Ubanim lo yumsu al aveis. Okay, so it's the other way around. Simple meaning, once again, means Avais cannot testify against their children. They're not, you know, a karev, a relative is not kosher leidus. But here as well, you're going to stretch it. That there's a deeper meaning as well. Hachinam here as well. You can never put a person to death. You can never accept any testimony from a person who has no chayis avais, who doesn't identify with his father. So what does that mean? Elagir hochanami de pasaleidus. Let's say a ger, right? His father is a god. Halachically, he doesn't relate to his father. That's your classic case of banim she'en lahem chayis aveis. So you mean to say that any ger is pasal for edus? That's a chiddush. We never heard that before. So, in line with the interpretation applying to part one, if you apply the same interpretation to part B, you're going to have this untrue conclusion that a ger is pasaleidus. Amri, so the response was like this. No, you can't compare. Hachi Hashta, how do you compare the two things? A ger to the eved. You see, a ger, nihi de'en l'chayis l'malo, true. He no longer identifies upwards, right, to his father, to his grandfather, but yesh l'chayis, but he has yichus, right, which means that his own offspring relate to him, lafuki eved, as opposed to the eved, who's one alone. De'en l'chayis lo l'malo l'lamato, who's totally disconnected. He doesn't relate upward to his parents and downwards to his offspring. So he's a totally different, state. Says the Gemara, Yisak Adaita, Ger Pasal Edis. Because if it were so, that we do interpret part B of the Pasuk in a manner which disqualifies even a Ger, if it were true, then the Pasuk would phrase itself differently. First, it would teach us that a ger is pasul eidus, and then we would know automatically, of course, if a ger is pasul, certainly an eved is pasul, because he's totally disconnected from his family, right? So if that were so, lichtav rachman, the pasuk would say like this, l'yumsu aves al b'neim, l'kadam rinan, l'yumsu be'edus pan. The pasuk would begin, l'yumsu aves al b'neim. You can never punish a father as a result of his children's testimony. Plain and simple, halacha that a child can never testify against the father. Simple. V'nichtav rachmona. And then, in part B of the pasuk, it would say like this. There, it would incorporate the halacha of the ger being pasul. Ubanam l'yimsal aves, which means the shamas min atrei. It would say it like this. Ubanam l'yimsal aves, that but both things we would learn from this. First of all, the simple meaning. Chada, number one, layumso banabedus aves, that a ben can never be punished resulting from his father's testimony, plain halacha. Ve'idach, and then the other deeper meaning, layumso api banim she'enam chayis aves, you can never listen and heed to any testimony offered by a son who doesn't identify with his father, basically a ger. So this portion of the pasuk would disqualify the ger. And once we know the ger is off, of course the eved. Because the eved has a double deficiency in both directions. He doesn't relate to his parents or his offspring. Ve'eved, nafkaleh, b'kavachemer, miger. And eved will be learned from a kavachemer, from the ger. Oma ger, if even a ger of the lamal, hud'in l'chais, although he doesn't relate back up to his forefathers, but does relate to his offspring. So despite the fact that it's only a limited disconnect, possible edus, he cannot offer edus. Certainly the eved is totally disconnected, upwards and downwards. Of course he's disqualified. So basically, if the Torah is endeavoring to teach us that an eved and a ger are on the same boat, then discuss ger, and automatically by default we will know eved. Ella rather, since the pasuk began by saying lo yumsu aves al banim, which again has this sort of double meaning. Firstly, that a ben can never testify against his father, plain and simple. And also the mashma, which teaches us the deeper meaning as well, the fact that it says al-banim instead of al-banihem, we have that extra drasha as well, that you can never be mamish, you can never offer mises bez, you can never act upon edus of a father who has no chayis banim, whose children, whose offspring don't relate to him. What does that teach us? That an eved is pasul edus. Mamino eved shein lechayis loylamat, only an eved who's totally disconnected from his parents and from his children, who the pasul edus, he cannot offer edus. Because he has that double deficiency. Aval ger, but a ger who is connected to his offspring, even the yesh lechayis lamat, he has that yichas going down, kosher edus is kosher for edus. So basically, the fact that the pasuk chose this type of expression, which includes the eved, that indicates to us that only the eved is disqualified, but not the ger. Because otherwise, the pasuk would only mention a loshen which incorporates the ger, the second part of the pasuk. A bonim lo yimsal avos, somebody who doesn't relate to his avos, such as a ger is pasul. And once the ger is pasul, of course the eved. No, the Torah began with a reference to the eved. What does that teach us? That only the eved is pasul because he's totally disconnected of a ger, but a ger is in. Even the yesh lechayis lamata kasheleidus. Once he has that yichus, at least in one direction, going down to his offspring, his kasheleidus. Asks the Gemara. Okay, so then why did the pasuk use similar phraseology in the second part as in the first part? It's unnecessary. Once we have learned in the first part that an eved is pasul but not a ger, so why in the second part of the pasuk does it say banam lo yumsal avos? We no longer have that, you know, source for the ger, right? The ger is kasher. So the pasuk is just simply teaching us that, you know, a simple halacha, banim cannot be put to death based on the father's testimony. A plain halacha that a father cannot say it is against his son. So, and it should use simple language. Banim lo yumsu al aviseyim, right? Any father cannot be made against his son. If that's the story, if that's the case, that part B of the pasuk is not teaching us any more than just a simple meaning, simple halacha, that an av cannot say edus against his son. Should say it like that. Why does it say it differently? Which sort of sounds like it's relating to that broader explanation. The mashma, which sounds like you can never accept edus from a son who doesn't relate to his father, which almost sounds like a ger is pasul, but you're telling me a ger is kosher. Says the Gemara, you're right. You know, sometimes the pasuk will do that. We'll use sort of matching language. There's no reference to this halacha in this part of the pasuk. No, but rather I did the kasal yimso of esal bonim on account of the fact that the pasuk chose this presentation in part one of the pasuk yimso of esal bonim, rather than just saying simply yimso of es al bneihem. It says al bonim to teach us that the eved is pasul because he's a father who has no yichus to his children, to his parents. Kasav nami ibonim leimsal avos. So on account of that, you know, the pasuk used similar expressions and similar phraseology in part B. But of course, it's only alluding to the simple halacha that an av cannot say edus against a son. But in terms of, you know, the eved versus the ger, only the eved is out and the ger is in. So bottom line, what is the status of an eved k'nani in terms of boishes, achlekas? Rabbi Yehuda says you pay boishes for the boishes of an eved. Sorry, the Rabbanan say you do. Rabbi Yehuda says you do not. It's a question of how to learn the word achiv. Right? According to Rabbi Yehuda, it needs to be an achva that pertains to marriage, which doesn't apply to the eved. The Rabbanan say achiv hu b'mitzvahis. There's that sort of identity of brothership when it comes to chiyuv of mitzvahs of the eved, so he's sort of in on that. When it comes to Edim Zoymimin, who plotted against the eved, well, all the halachas apply there as well. Be'ata Rami Kerbecha, all types of evil are included in that. Regarding appointing him as a king, according to all shittos, he's not qualified. It's not Mikerev Achecha, Mimufchar Sheb Achecha. And regarding an eved being kashal edus, which theoretically was a kasha, according to Rabbanon, consider him one of your brethren, so why not? We have either the kavachomer there or the pasuk layumso aves alpanim. Continues the Gemara. Cheder shoyt vegot mgiyosan ro. Imei, we have a story involving the mother of the Rav Shmuel bar Abba. So Rav Shmuel, the son of Abba, his mother did something like this. Imei the Rav Shmuel bar Abba mihagrunya from this town. Havas nasiva. So his mother was married to Rav Abba, right? Rav Shmuel bar Abba's father. Havas nasiva le the Rav Abba. Now apparently she had plenty of assets and she wanted to pass it on to her son. Typically a husband inherits his wife's assets after her passing, but she wanted to pass it on to her own son. Kasvesinu le nechsi. So she wrote away her assets. Lurav Shmuel bar Abba to her son. Bra, right, her son. Basa de Shechiva, after she passed on, so the son of Shmuel Bar Abba wanted to take possession. Also, Shmuel Bar Abba, he went to who? Kamei de Rabbi Yirmiyahu Bar Abba. Ukmei, and you know, he showed him the document, and he got it. He took possession. Ukmei benichsis to Rabbi Yirmiyahu Bar Abba, gave him access. He won the case. He took the nechas. Father wasn't too happy. Ozel Rab Abba, and he related the story, complained to a different chacham. Amra lemosa, kamei tohu to Rabbi Yisha. Ozel Rabbi Yisha, Amra kamei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yisha went and passed on the story to Rabbi Yehuda. You know, what's the halach in this case? Does the son have a right to the father? Amra leis, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it goes to the father. Hachi Amra Shmuel. Shmuel told us, ha'ish ha'shamach Rabbi Nichsem Alug. So Nichsem Alug are these possessions that technically belong to the married woman. So the actual land, let's say it's real estate, so the land itself belongs to her, but the husband has a right to the income that's generated throughout the marriage. That's the arrangement. So let's say the Isha sells these properties during her lifetime, during her marriage, b'chaye bala, during her husband's lifetime, umesa, then she passes on. So she sold them, and then she passed on. Typically, if she would not have sold, husband gets it. But here as well, habal moiti medalakuches, the husband has a right to expropriate it, to extract it from these buyers. Why? Because the Chachamim established that a husband has a din of lekiach rishon, Rashi says. He's like the first buyer. He has first rights. So as soon as she passes away, he gets it. Okay, it's here as well. Let's connect it to our story as well. Sure, she sold, she gave it away to her kid, but the husband overrides that, and he gets it upon her passing. Okay, Gemara continues. So Shmuel seemed to disagree with Rav Yirmiyahu Bar Abba's conclusion. So they went back and they related this to Rav Yirmiyahu. Amru kamed Rav Yirmiyahu Bar Abba. Look, Shmuel disagreed with your verdict. Amalu, he responded, look, I don't know, Anomas Nisi Adan, I'm coming from a Braisa. Some say it's a Geres Masnis, it's a Mishnah. That's not, listen to this Mishnah, which will prove me right. That's not a Kosev Nechosel Venoi Lachar Moise. A father has a field, a property. And he gives it away, he grants it, he writes it off to his own son. So he says, look, after my passing, you'll take possession of this. You know, there are other sons. No, I want to give it to you. This is yours after I pass away. Not now, but after I pass on. What's the status of this field until father passes away? Right? So, let's divide into two. We have the guf and the payers, the actual property, the guf, the actual field. Technically, you know, it's sort of the sons, right? The father gave it to him. So Guf is the sons, he owns the actual field, but the payers, anything that's income related belongs to the father. He sort of retained that hold, that right, until he passes on. So the Guf, son, payers, father. Haben, so at this point, it's sort of in a state of limbo, right? Haben einu yechal limkor, so if the son turns around and decides to sell this field, he can't. It's not fully his. It's still the father's to a certain extent. And likewise, va'av. Einu yechal limkor, he can't either sell it. Because it's been granted to the kid. Macharav. Father chooses yes to sell at this point. Mechurim achiyomus. It's sold temporarily until he passes on. Then it reverts to the kid. He can sell the income rights, but the actual field belongs to the son. Machar ben, if the son chose to sell at this point, ein lo lekeach, so the son's customer cannot enter the field until father passes on. But let's make a diuk. This is Rav Yirmiyahu speaking now. So we finished the Mishnah. Now, kimay is av, but let's say, right, son sold it, and then a year later, father passed on. At that point, Mia still, right, certainly, is the lekeach. the son's buyer will access the field. And we're assuming that this holds true of Afagav de Mesa Ben Bechayav. Let's go back. Reuben and Shimon. Reuben gave away his field to his son Shimon. Right? After my passing, it's yours. Shimon sold it to Levi. So in the meantime, Levi cannot access. Now Shimon, the son, passed away first. So he never actually took possession of the field. And then Reuben, the father, passed away. We're assuming, even in this type of case, Levi will take possession because he bought it from Shimon, the rightful owner, right? Even though Shimon died during his father's lifetime, in which case, the field never reverted to his full ownership. He never actually fully got it because the father still had the peiros, still had limited access. The son's goof ownership is sufficient to allow him to sell it. And whose shita are we following? Kirab Shimon Malakish, like that shita, the Amor says, Leishna meis haben mechayav. It doesn't matter what happened, who died first, whether the son died first, the Leosel Yod, in which case he never actually took possession of this full property. Leosel Yod the Ben, because father was still partially accessing the field. So either that case, or the father died first, in which case the son did take full possession. In both cases, kind of like Keiach. Levi, the customer, will acquire the field. The Itmah, because we have learned. Meaning, where do we see this point from Rish Lakish? Because we learned like this. So the son sold a field during his father's lifetime, right? So Shimon sold the field to Levi. And Shimon, the son, died while Reuben, the father, was still alive. Question, does Levi get it or not? Levi does not get it. In a minute, we'll see why. Rish Lakish, Amar, he does. Why? Rabbi Yechon, Levi doesn't get it. Amar Lach, because Rabbi Yechon says like this. Kiktani mas nisi. The halacha that we just learned in the Mishnah, which sounds otherwise, which sounds like Levi does get it. Mocher Aben Lekon Lekech Ach Yom Asav. If the son, Shimon, sold it to Levi, Levi has to wait until Reuben dies. But at that point, he does get it. V'chi Mai Yisav is still a Keach. But when the father, Reuben, dies, Levi does get it. That holds true only he, Delei Meis Habein V'chayav. Only if Shimon did not pass away during his father's lifetime. Rather, Reuben died first, in which case, also the Aben. Shimon took possession, so that sort of reverts to Levi. He became a full owner. So it makes sense that he can sell it. But if it was in the reverse, Aval Meis HaBen V'chayav, but if Shimon died first, the Leos Leod the Ben, in which case Shimon never took full possession because Reuven, the father, was still a part owner all along. He was Kinyan Peres, right? Ki Mayis Av, so even if ultimately Reuven died, but if Shimon died first, he's out of it. Nami less Lekeach. So if the father died, even if he died after, it doesn't matter. Lekeach doesn't get it. Why? Alma Kasavar. Apparently, Rabbi Yochanan holds Kinyan Peres. The limited ownership expressed by the father, Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Guf Dami, is regarded like actual ownership of the actual property. And that is a barrier that blocks, that prevents the son from selling. V'chizavan lav didei zavan. So when Shimon sold the field, it wasn't a proper sale because father overrode that. So if ultimately father dies and son actually takes full possession, so now it reverts to his customer. But if that never happened, because Shimon died first, it never got to the point that Shimon fully acquired it. Father's Kinyan Peres is regarded as actual ownership. But Reb Shimon Lakish Aimer Kanan Lekech. Even in this case, Levi, who is Shimon, the son's buyer, will get it. Because according to Rish Lakish, Kik Tani Masnis, this halacha that we just learned in the Mishnah, that it reverts to Levi, the Mocher Aben, if Shimon sold it. Ein Lekech Ach Yom Asaav. Levi will have to wait until Reuben dies. But Kimayas Av Mias Isli Lekech. But when Reuben ultimately does pass on, Levi gets it. Doesn't matter how. Doesn't matter what. Lo yishna lo yimeisa ben b'chayav. Whether Shimon did not ultimately die during Reuven's lifetime. In which case, you know, Reuven died first. The also the other the ben. In which case, the field reverted to Shimon's full ownership. Not only in that case do we say it gets transferred to Levi, but lo yishna, and likewise, it doesn't matter if Meisa ben mechayav, if Shimon was the one who died first, the lo yasil yadid the ben, in which case it wasn't, it never reverted to full ownership on account of Shimon. Kan lekeach, Levi gets it. Why? Alma kasava. Clearly, Rav Shlakish holds kinyan peiros, laki kinyan gufdami. Father's limited ownership is not regarded as full ownership, and therefore mechika zaven, dideka zaven. When Shimon sold, it was his field that was sold. So, irrespective of the order of events or the sequence of these, Levi gets it. Okay, so that's the sort of general presentation. We have this machlokes where Rav Shimon Lakish says kinyan perish lav ki kinyan guftam. So, limited ownership is limited, right? That's it. We don't look at it as actual ownership. Now, v'anan hashta. Now, let's take a look at our case, right? Hashta bein Rabbi Yirmiyah ba Abba, or bein Rabbi Yehuda, both of these shitas, Rabbi Yirmiyah ba Abba and Rabbi Yehuda that we went through before, apparently they all hold Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish really. They hold like Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, and Rashi explains because that's how we paskin. Now, halacha is that typically we paskin like Rish Lakish in this halacha. Rashi brings three cases that we pass on Rish Lakish, one of which is this. Kinyan HaPeres is not Kinyan HaGuf. So let's move on. So once we have that as an established fact, how does that pertain to our story with the mother and the father and the kid? The Ka'amar, Rabbi Yirmiyah ba Abba. So Rabbi Yirmiyah ba Abba was now basing it on this whole presentation. He says like this. If it were so that limited ownership, Kinyan Peres is regarded like full ownership. Ki ma'is av, u'ma'is haben, b'chaya av. So in the case where we have a son who sold, and the son passed on during father's lifetime, so he never actually took full possession because father had the Kinyan Peres. And Rish Lakish says that yeah, it does go on to his customer. Ama'is le'lekeach. So why does the customer get it? Because of and hai. Loved it because of it. The fact is that when Shimon sold it, right? Hi, this fellow Shimon, we sold it. Loved it because of it. He didn't sell his own field. It was really the father's. Oh, Allah Shmami, no. So why is it that we say that it works? Apparently, Kinyan HaPeres, love, Ki Kinyan HaGufdami, it's clear from the Mishnah, based on Rish Lakish's explanation, that father's limited ownership, Kinyan HaPeres, is not regarded as Kinyan HaGuf. Okay, so bottom line, in our case as well, story with the mother who gave his stuff away to the kid. It belongs to him, despite the fact that father had Kinyan HaPeres. So what? That's not real ownership. And even though a husband is entitled to the, you know, to the Peres income coming from his wife's assets, but that's a limited sechus. It's not a real kinyan, it's not a real ownership, and therefore the isha can certainly give it away to her kid. And even if she passed away before the husband, right, that's the case. If she passed away before him, so she never really regained full possession of her field. The pair still pertain to her husband, still he's not really an owner, and it goes to the kid. So that was Rav Yirmiyah ba Abba's presentation to support his opinion. Okay, who was the opposing view? Rav Yehuda, right? He was the one who said that the husband has full rights, right? He overrides it. So Hadro the commander Rav Yehuda. So the ones who heard this presentation from Rav Yirmiyah went and sort of related it back to Rav Yehuda. What do you say? What do you have to say about this argument? Amar Lahu, so he responded like this. I'm not impressed. Hachi Amar Shmuel, Zoinim Doimel Mishnah Seinu. It happens to be that Shmuel already told me that you can't compare the two, the apples and oranges. You can't compare the story there to our case, the Mishnah Seinu to our case. Right? Why? My time of why? Omar of Yosef, I'll tell you why. Listen to this. You can't prove anything from that story with the father and the son. You see, you're assuming that the the father only sort of enabled the son to get the field after father's passing, right? So basically, it was a very limited gift. It was sort of only a potential gift, which only sort of gets to you. Father only giving it to him sort of as soon as he dies, right? Until then, it's sort of hovering, it's pending. It's not a full gift at this point. So son never really got it, and then the question is, how could he sell it, right? Father still owns it, etc., right? Who says? Perhaps, the reason is a bit different. You see, the son was a potential heir regardless. He was going to get the field regardless upon his father's passing. So when father gives away his field to his own son, perhaps what he means to say is like this: I know you're going to get it later, that's no question. I want to give it to you now. I'm sort of giving it to you in full. If you want to sell it, you can sell it. So that explains why the son can sell it. It's a totally different case. Okay, let's see. Amar Yosef, Bishlam Yitani Ifcha. Certainly, if the case in the Mishnah, they would have been the other way around. Let's try to picture a similar case, but in reverse. Hakosev Nechas of the Aviv. Instead of father giving his field to his son, we have a son turning around and giving his own personal field to his father. He doesn't want his own, kids, whatever, together. He wants to give it to his father. Okay? And again, the point is, I'm giving it to you, upon my passing, it's going to be fully yours. In the meantime, I, the son, will still get the peiros. And then we have the same story. Father sold it, right? And we would have the result would be that the lekeach, the customer, the father's customer, gets it. And Rish Lakish would, come and add that point, that it doesn't matter how, sequence of events are irrelevant, whether son died first or father died, it doesn't matter. The lekeach, father's customer, gets it. So if that would be the case, theoretically, if that were to be have been the case, that really is a solid proof to your point. So then, in fact, you can prove that the Kinyan Peres, that the son's limited access at this point, the Peres that he gets, that's it's not actual ownership. Lav, Ke Kinyan HaGuvdami, it's not regarded as full ownership, it does not interfere with father's ability to sell. That would be a solid proof. Because son has Peres, father has potential Guf, which only really kicks in after the son passes away. And there we say, well, once the son passes away, whether or not the father actually got it, because even if father passed away first, doesn't matter. Once the son passes away, it goes to the father's customer, despite the fact that the son had limited ownership, because limited ownership is worthless. So then you have a good raya, the kinyan peiros is nothing. Lav, ki kinyan guftami. Ella, but now, in our case, it's a bit different. It's slightly different, perhaps. Hashtu d'ktami. But in our case, we have the other way around. Father gave his property to his son. Maybe what he meant to do is to give it to him immediately with the ability to sell it. Because in any case, son was going to be yours, the father. So what was the point of father giving it to him? Perhaps he was fully granting him access to the field, including the ability to sell it now. So perhaps that's the underlying reason for the whole halacha. That's a totally different case than the case of the mother with the son, where Rashi explains the son was not roi to be yerush the father, and therefore this whole rationale doesn't apply. The mother, and therefore this whole rationale doesn't apply. Amalei Abayi says like this: no, you can't differentiate. Atu bra yoris abo. Abo la yoris bra? What are we basing this distinction on? You think only a son is yerush a father, a father is not yerush a son? It works both ways, right? Father is yerush a son. He doesn't have other, and a son is yerush the father. So, we can't differentiate. In both cases, they're roi to be yerush. Elo lavruchinu lenichsim yibreka asi. So, apparently, why was the father giving his field to his son, who in any case is going to be Yerushim? Apparently, he was trying to make him the exclusive sole heir. I don't want it to go to my other sons. Right? So who says I wanted it to be effective immediately? I meant after my passing, I wanted to go to you, not to the other ones. I didn't mean anything more than that. I didn't mean to expand your ownership and give you access immediately. I'm still having Kinyan Peres. It's yours only after my passing. The reason why it was necessary to give it to him was so that only he gets it, not the other brothers. Sorry, the other way. Let's go back to the case where his son gave it to his father. A similar point, just the sequence of the difference. So when a son gives it to his father, apparently he had his own sons. He didn't want them to get it. Rather, he wanted his father to get it. So, when he gives it to him, he just meant to say, look, I don't want my kids to get it after my passing. I want you to get it. But I didn't mean to say it's effective immediately, right? You'll get it later. But I want you, not my kids. To sort of get away, get the nechassim. They ask, it's away, mi break us. He's coming to do it to get it away from his kids. It takes effect later. I don't want them to get it later. I want you to get it later. Right? So, if the Mishnah would have presented the case that way, son giving to the father, I would interpret the halacha. I mean, why is the father his customer? So the father turns around and sells his field that he just got from his son. Why does the customer get it? Apparently, because the Kenyan Paris, the limited access that the son still has during his lifetime, is not regarded as actual ownership. It doesn't interfere with the father's sale. Hachinami, here as well, in our case, where father gave it to the kid, same. We can apply the same modus operandi, the same sort of the same rationale. The reason why the father decided to give it to his favorite child is to get it away from the other brothers of this child, basically from his other children. So that was his motive. He didn't mean more than that. He didn't mean to give it to him fully, immediately. This is yours upon my passing. But in the meantime, father still has limited access. Can you have Paris? And still, what does the mission say? If a son turns around and sells it, irrespective of what follows, whether son was ever around to actually take possession or not, doesn't matter. So the lekech gets it. His customer takes possession. What do you mean? Father had access. He had payers. Kenyan payers is not real ownership. Okay? So that's the way to explain the Mishnah there. And likewise, let's compare it to the case of the story in our Gemara. Mother granted her field to her kid. It goes to him, despite the fact that husband had to pay this. Okay, Ella Mai Ein Adoyma, the Mishnah Seinu. So the question is like this. Why, what was the basis for Shmuel saying that these two cases are incomparable? It seems to be a good matchup, a good parallel. Answers the Gemara Meshum Takanas Usha. Even though, generally speaking, Kinyan Peres is perhaps not Kinyan Aguf. Okay, but when it comes to a husband, it's totally different. It was a special Takana established when the Sanhedrin was residing in the town of Usha that granted husband full rights, full access, that overrides anything else. And Rashi says it's based on the concern of generating discontent and disharmony within the familial setting, Mishum Eva. So Chachamim granted the husband power to override his wife's sales. If any wife sells her nichsei milug during her husband's lifetime, umeis, and then she passes away, who gets it? Husband. Habal moitzi med lekuchet. Husband has the right to go extract it from these customers. Basically, he keeps it. So it's a totally different context. Husband and wife, totally different context. Special takana, and that explains why, according to Rabbi Yehuda, in this case, where the mother gave her stuff away to the kid, to her son, Rav Shmuel Bar Abba, the father, Rav Abba, was able to go and extract it and take possession. Okay, so that sort of summarizes Amud Beis, and once again, in Amud Aleph, we discuss the status of an Eved regarding Boishevs, Eidus, Eidim Zayimin, and being appointed as a king. Eved is a Pasul Eidus, but a Ger, of course, is Kashul Eidus. Okay, so we're right in the middle of the sugi here with the episode of the mother's sale, Machlokes, and we concluded that, at least according to Rav Shmuel, Rav Yehuda quoted Shmuel, when it comes to a Baal, the special takana, that his koyach is stronger than the lokeach, and we'll continue on that discussion. Be'ez Hashem, Yisbarach, tomorrow. All the best to you, and Hatzlacha Rabbah.